This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Joining us is Matt Maiocco from NBC Sports Bay Area, and the draft is complete. The 49ers have made their moves. Minicamp is going on. Draft choices are getting signed. And so far, what kind of stash do you think the 49ers got, Matt? Did it go like you thought it did, or did it go different?
I think it went a little bit different. Yeah, I kind of thought there was a chance that they would go with a tackle in the first round, but you know, for the most part, all the way leading up to it, I kind of thought they'd go defense, but you know, with their first two picks, they went offense, and I guess it makes sense. You know, if you're going to sign Jimmy Garoppolo and at the time make him the highest paid player in the league, and you know you have him for 5 years, why not get a tackle that's going to protect him during that time, and why not get another weapon on offense? A guy like Dante Pettis that can play all three wide receiver spots and return kicks. So I think when you look at what the 49ers did last year with the draft, it was pretty clear that they needed players at the top end of their roster. And this year, you know, after you get past the first couple of picks, I think what they tried to do was build out the bottom of their roster. So when that time in the season comes, when they have to dip into the reserves, they're going to be stronger when they go to the backups than they would have been had they not added those players.
Yeah, I mean, because it seemed like even in the whole division, it wasn't, except for maybe Josh Rosen, it wasn't really a sexy draft for all four teams.
No, you know, but when you look at it, you know, what makes a sexy draft, right? I mean, it's playmakers. You know, it's guys who make plays with the ball in their hands, and you know, three of the four teams in the division have their quarterbacks, and there's really no question about it. And I think for the most part, all the teams kind of feel solid about having players around them that can make those quarterbacks look good or kind of you know, enable the quarterbacks to be distributors of the ball and keep those offenses going. In the 49ers' case, when you look at their first pick, you know, number 9 overall, Mike McGlinchey, Joe Staley's getting up there in years. You know, he's going to be turning 34 shortly. The 49ers did not think that Trent Brown, their right tackle, had as a long-term future with the team. They just did not like his work ethic and some of the stuff he was showing them behind the scenes. And so they felt like they had to address that tackle position, because if they didn't do it this year, it was going to be a difficult spot for them next year. You know, tackles don't fall out of trees in free agency, and if you get yourself into a position where you have to take a tackle in the draft, you know, that's not a real good position either. So they went with the tackle with McGlinchey, and then they immediately got on the phone and swung a deal with New England to send Trent Brown, a guy with just 1 year left on his deal, to Bill Belichick. From what I understand, they were very upfront with the Patriots, so Belichick knows the challenges that he gets in getting a player like Trent Brown, who's a physical specimen, good feet, tremendous size, just lacks the work ethic. So if anyone's going to light a fire under Trent Brown, it's going to be Bill Belichick.
Oh, no question about it. And I guess, did Trenton come in a little out of shape or something like that?
Yeah, so he cut his season short with a shoulder injury, had surgery, and the word that around the 49ers that I'd been hearing was that yes, he came in, you know, pushing four bills, and you know, so they sent him to New England, and again, I mean, I think that if Trent Brown doesn't show more urgency, more dedication, you know, pay better attention to his physical condition, to his mental preparation, than a guy who, from the outside, you would think is in line to get a huge second contract, might not get much of a contract at all for next season.
Wow. That's amazing when you really think about it. What is it so far? How's McGlinchey, and how's the draft choices look on the field?
Well, they've been out there for one practice that I saw. They had the second day of the mini camp, second and final day of the mini camp today. That is close to the media. But, yeah, I mean, McClinchy definitely looks the part. And what sold the 49ers on him was, yes, the physical. You know, he's 6'8", 305 pounds. He's a pretty good athlete. But they really like his commitment. They like his presence. And, you know, obviously a guy who steps in a room and commands the room isn't a reason to take a guy with a first-round draft pick. But when you tie that all together, I think they feel pretty good about the guy they're getting. You know, they feel good about the player they're getting, and I think they feel good about the person they're getting. One of the guys who really stood out, Pettis had some pretty good moments in the practice that I watched. It was only a 75-minute practice. One of the guys who really stood out was a seventh-round pick, wide receiver Richie James. He's from Middle Tennessee, broke a lot of records there. A talented kid, a little bit undersized, but tough as nails. Had a couple of broken collarbones in college, and that's why his draft stock really slipped. But he made a good first impression. And the thing I like about this offseason, just around the NFL, and, you know, this kind of floated under the radar, at least it did for me, was that now every kid who's drafted, every kid who's signed as a free agent can report to their teams immediately. You know, you don't have to wait for that rule to kick in about, you know, the schools and when they held their graduation ceremonies. Teams are obligated, if a kid is still in school, to give that player time to finish coursework. The team is on the hook for any travel as far as going to and from the school to complete coursework complete finals. But now, you know, we saw it last year. There's always been 2, 3, 4 kids every year who aren't able to join the off-season program. And then when training camp starts, I mean, they're just kind of their head spinning. You know, last year it was Solomon Thomas and an undrafted rookie from Eastern Washington, Kendrick Bourne, that were unable to participate in the offseason program. But this year around the NFL, that rule has changed. So now everybody, starting Monday, can just show up and get to work.
And that would include all the Pac-12 schools that are on quarter systems?
That is correct. And Dante Pettis is a guy that wouldn't have been able to participate in the program. And he would have been far behind. And I've seen in the past where, especially wide receivers, they show up and they don't know what the heck they're doing early in training camp. But, yeah, Dante Pettis will be able to participate, you know, starting today and not ending at all. So, yeah, he can get going to work on Monday with all the veterans.
Interesting. I know that they had talked about that, but it looks like they didn't even announce that, did they?
I don't recall it.
No,
that's why it was kind of a surprise to me when Dante told me, he goes, well, it's my understanding I can work on Monday. And I checked around, and the 49ers told me, yeah, all these guys can get to work. And the only requirements is that the team has to give them, it's a little bit vague, but they have to give them time to do their schoolwork, and they do have to, you know, they do have to provide them the transportation, the airfare to get back and forth if need be. But yeah, that is something new like I said, is just slipped through underneath the radar.
Mm-hmm, no question. What's been the vibe on Pettis?
He's an interesting kid. I don't know if you know him much at all, but he's an artsy kind of kid. Loves the arts, loves photography. And it's interesting, John, I was talking to him on Thursday, and I asked him how many visits he took, and he took 6. And I thought to myself, well, that's kind of a high number for, you know, a kid who's expected to be a, you know, a second or third round pick. And I said, was there one area that teams kind of wanted to get to know about you? And he said, absolutely. He goes, they wanted to know if I had passion for the game, because he goes, I'm not shy about letting people know that I have interests outside of football, that I love the arts. And so isn't that interesting? There were six teams that brought him in, and they all kind of followed the same line of questioning. Like,
wow,
you know, what are, do you have passion for the game? That was what they wanted to know, and he certainly convinced the 49ers that he has passion for football, because not only did they take him with their second-round pick, they traded up to take him. They took him at number 44 overall. So what the 49ers like about him is that he can play all the wide receiver positions. You know, his first few years of college, he played on the outside. This last season, you know, they moved him around a lot. He played in the slot. So they see him as a backup or somebody, you know, say if Marquise Goodwin runs a deep route and he comes to the sideline, it's going to be Dante Pettis who goes in for him. If Pierre Garçon needs a breather, it's Dante Pettis who's going to go in for him. There will be competition at the slot receiver spot with Trent Taylor and Pettis, and also, you know, the punt returner position. So they see him as a guy who is not only a three-down player, but who can be a four-down player for them.
Interesting. Now, did they answer all their needs? Did they get everything taken care of?
No, I don't think they did. And here's why. There's two positions that when you look at it in the draft, I thought, okay, they have to address these areas. One is pass rusher, but then again, show me a team in the league that doesn't need a pass rusher.
Right.
The other spot is offensive guard. And I think, you know, they did not fill any of those needs. And I think the reason was they just were not sold at all on these pass rushers. They did not think that there was anybody at any point where they drafted that was worth taking. There's some under-the-radar guys with the 49ers, and I'm going to mention one name you guys know pretty well, Cassius Marsh.
Mm-hmm.
They feel like in this system, in a very specialized role, he can be effective. And so they didn't, you know, they didn't go out and get Marcus Davenport at number 9. You know, they didn't look for Harold Landry. They didn't want to roll the dice and take a character risk guy like Arden Key. And so that was one area where they didn't improve. But they, I think they went into this draft thinking that there were no improvements out there. And in the guard positions, you know, maybe they had some guys on their board at certain spots that might have gone, but they're going to go with Jonathan Cooper, who they feel resurrected his career last year at the Cowboys. They're going to go with Lakin Tomlinson, and they're going to go with a first-round draft pick from a couple of years ago, Joshua Garnett from Stanford, who spent last year on IR. So they think that among those three guys, and you add in Weston Richburg at center, who's going to make the guards on either side of him a little bit better, they think that they have enough firepower, or I shouldn't say firepower, but they have enough people in those two spots that warranted them standing pat and not trying to reach and get somebody else in the draft.
Are they good enough at wide receiver?
They like the group. And so it's kind of interesting when, you know, outside perception, how it meshes with inside the building. It's not a position group on their team that for the outside makes you think that it's a good group. But Pierre Garçon, he was on pace for an 1,000-yard season last year, and he got injured 8 games in before Jimmy Garoppolo took over. I think Garçon is a guy that could really, really see a spike with Garoppolo and his style. Marquise Goodwin is a guy that they showed a lot of faith in, and they had him running more the route tree than what he ever did with Buffalo. And he had darn near a 1,000-yard season, and his numbers took off when Garoppolo took over. Taylor is a guy who showed a lot of promise in the slot as a rookie, and now they've added – like I mentioned, Dante Pettis, they added Richie James. And Kendrick Bourne, a young guy, shows a lot of talent if he can kind of figure out what it takes to be a pro. So it's not guys with a lot of name recognition, but it's guys who fit what Kyle Shanahan wants from that offense. So, you know, my answer to you is I'm a little bit skeptical that they had the wide receivers. I can see what they like in some of those guys, but inside the building, Kyle Shanahan really likes the group that he's put together and the group that offers a lot of different versatility, a lot of different roles, a lot of different options for him to create matchups that he likes.
Very good. And how, so far, I mean, now year and a couple months into the Kyle Shanahan era, how much do you like him as a coach and the expectations?
I really like him. I think he seems to be a guy, and I did not know him before he became the 49ers coach. I'd only heard stuff about him. And frankly, a lot of the stuff I heard about him wasn't all that positive, just kind of how, you know, he was just so cocky, so arrogant. And, man, I don't see it. I mean, I see a guy that, being around him now for 15, 16 months and getting to know him pretty well, I just think he's really cut out to be a head coach. And, you know, maybe, you know, I'm sure the goal all along was to be a head coach. And so, you know, maybe he was kind of a – I can see it where if he's a coordinator and he sees parts of the team that he's with that aren't doing it the way he likes, you know, he didn't have that control to go to the defensive coordinator or go to the head coach and say, hey, this is what I think we should be doing. But I think he has a really good touch as a head coach to know, you know, how involved he needs to be on the defensive side, how involved he needs to be on the special teams side. But also, he just knows exactly what he wants on offense. And that's why, and I kind of respect this move, he did not hire an offensive coordinator when he became the head coach. We've all been around head coaches that were, in fact, the offensive coordinator, but there was always the guy who had that title who really wasn't the offensive coordinator. So Kyle Shanahan basically said, hey, enough of this BS. Yeah, I'm the offensive coordinator and the head coach. Why do I need to hire somebody who's, you know, quote-unquote, the offensive coordinator? So I think he has a really good feel and a really good touch as a head coach. And now after, you know, leading this team and seeing it go from 1-9, or 1-10 actually, to 5-10 or to 6-10 with five straight wins with Jimmy Garoppolo, 49ers won't be sneaking up on anybody in this season.
No doubt. No, I think that, you know, they got everybody kind of wondering how good they can be, and that finish was great. And, of course, your stuff always great. Matt Maioka, thanks for joining us, NBC Sports in the Bay Area.
John, always my pleasure. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Hey, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Russ in Linwood. Hey, Russ.
Hey, JC. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Good. Hey, what do you think about the Bears?
You know, there's something I still think is missing. I mean, I don't know. It's like, obviously they did great with, you know, Smith, the first round pick. You know, they got a real good playmaking linebacker, but there's still, are they good enough at wide receiver? Question that.
Yeah.
Are they good enough on defense? Question that. You know, does Trubisky have enough to throw to? I'm still not sold. I mean, what have you, what glimmer of hope have you seen that you like?
Not a heck of a lot. Of course, everybody's going to the Super Bowl on draft day, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe not Cleveland.
No, I really don't, John. I thought maybe they'd go for some tall wide receivers, but I guess they did grab one.
Mm-hmm.
But you hit it right on the head. They're hurting in certain key areas. I don't know why they can't address that.
Well, and what I look at is, I mean, some of the decision-making, and, you know, I have to be critical of what they've done on two players.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you have Cameron Meredith, who 2 years ago was their best receiver,
right,
and you put the low tender on him, and then you come back and you say, well, we can't pay him 4.8 like New Orleans. Well, you shouldn't have had to. You put, you know, 2.9 on him, and you don't have him lost,
right,
and there's no compensation. So they lose, you know, a talent, even though he's coming off a ACL injury. And then, you know, the question mark with Kyle Fuller, They didn't put the fifth round tender on, the fifth year tender, because he wasn't that good. And then they come back and put the transition on him and have to pay him $14 million because that's what the Packers paid him.
Yeah. Oh, one more thing, I'll let you go. Who's backing up Trubisky?
Chase Daniels.
Who?
Chase Daniels. Remember, they signed him in free agency, paid him good money?
Okay, all right. I thought it would be Mark Sanchez.
Nope. Right now, Mark is out of football. He's not got a job, and he's got a four-game suspension for PEDs.
Oh, that's right.
Hey, well, Russ, thank you for the call.
Take care.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Load up those phone lines. Let's go to Rashid in Bothell. Hey, Rashid.
Hi, Professor. How are you doing,
sir? Doing great.
Hey, can I give a shout-out to Matt, the nicest producer and screener of calls?
Absolutely.
I mean, he's so nice.
Absolutely.
He's amazing. Hey, Professor, you know, I've read a lot of these post-draft analysis, and people don't realize, I think Seattle might have waited a little bit for Rashad, but they didn't have a second-round pick, and he was not going to last beyond 50, and they couldn't get a better offer. They might have gotten some offer to trade down, but that would have guaranteed them a top 50 pick and stuff. So that's why they moved in. And I heard Pete yesterday on Brock and Salk, and he looked really resolute and stuff. And I think he's thinking like 2011. And so in a couple of years, I think good things are ahead for the Seahawks.
Oh, I agree. And honestly, there was a trade that they could have made and almost made to trade down and get another third-round pick and probably a little bit more. But they realized if they moved down that far, they weren't going to get Rashard Penny. And they did not want to give up Rashard Penny. And so you can understand that if he's the running back of their choice, that, get him. So as much as they wanted to try to make some kind of a deal, they did not and probably were smart in doing so.
Yes, and that's the thing. Like, I mean, everything, all these grades are anyway. But I think, like, if they're convinced that this is what they want to do, then kudos to them to sticking to their guns. And you know, I'm so confident now. Like, I like these thing in the rookies because now they will get on the field, and that people don't understand that. Like, no rookies or no like third round, fourth round people like in the last 2-3 years, they've never got on the field because everybody was playing like 90% of the snaps.
No, it's a different, I think they're getting their, I guess, I don't know what you call it, energy, but they're kind of getting their mojo back because Pete Carroll thought, and particularly with the comments that he made about Richard Sherman and Michael Bennett, that they lost that a little bit. And they wanted to regain that because, you know, if guys weren't buying in, and maybe rightfully or wrongfully, they're thinking that, you know, those guys weren't buying in, then you have to try to make change.
And, Professor, even though I liked Arizona's pickup of Josh Rosen, I think it's a good one, but their O-line, people don't realize their O-line might have been the worst, actually worse than Seattle in the last half of the season. And to put that brittle quarterback behind that line and they didn't make any improvements, what is your prognosis on Arizona and Josh Rosen next year?
Well, do you see where Vegas actually came out and said that they were going to win 5.5 games, the same as the Cleveland Browns as being the worst two teams in football? I don't know if I totally buy those numbers, but I think you can see it's going to be a rebuilding year. You know, they're going to try to do it with a patchwork quarterback situation. You know, they got a lot of needs at the wide receiver position. Their offensive line is being almost totally reconstructed. And so you throw all that together and you go, well, we'll see how good this is going to be.
Yeah. And Professor, one last question. I know after May 15th, any unrestricted free agent signings don't count towards comp pick, and Seattle is way too down anyway. But I think, don't you think this the space that they've cleared after Cliff Avril, they might move on some unrestricted free agents after May 15th? Can you explain?
Yeah, and actually, it's May 8th. So it's,
May 8th. Okay.
Yeah, so it's really coming up even closer. Yeah, but the compensatory pick story is over. I mean, they're just not going to get any. It's just, that's just the way it is. They had the chance, but they've lost more. They've signed more free agents than they've lost. And so consequently, you just have to realize that, you know, they had three fourth round picks they could have had, but there was more urgent need on the team than that. So you just don't worry about it.
And one more, and then I'll take your comments up here. About the D-tackle, what do you think of the D-tackle situation in Seattle? And do you Do you think they might bring in a couple of more bodies?
And I think they could. I mean, maybe a defensive end. But
okay.
I think it's more because, I mean, defensive tackle, they're fine. Because remember, they signed two from the Minnesota Vikings, you know, Steven, and they also signed Tom Johnson. You know, they have the two draft choices from the past couple of years, Jaron Reed and also Nas Jones. And, you know, say what you want about their third-round pick, Raheem Green, but on pass rush situations, he's a pass rusher. And so they have, you know, the option. They have four-man rotation there. So, no, they're fine at defensive tackle. Maybe they're a little thin for pass-rushing defensive ends, and that's something maybe they'll look at.
Okay, thanks a lot, Professor. You have a nice week.
Okay, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Give us a call. We'll take a break and then come back. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
And our thanks to Matt Nelson for producing and running this show. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Jet. Jet, how are you?
Hey, Sonny and Leon, I'm done with my assignment.
There you go. Welcome back. Are you happy?
Oh, my God. Who is the luckiest GM in football?
Mike Maccagnan.
Who's the king of the first round of football?
Mike Maccagnan.
You betcha.
They got Sam Darnold for three number twos. I like it.
Boy, even you, a devout Jet heckler for decades, can't even call out Maccagnan for this one.
No, you can't.
I mean, it could not have fallen any better. He couldn't have played it any better. You know, what can you say? Now it's up for Todd Bowles to screw it up.
Well, I mean, and I like Todd, so I think he has a chance to do the right things.
Boy, I hope so.
When you saw that, the Cleveland Browns took Baker Mayfield, what was your reaction?
My reaction was tears, John. Tears of joy. I kid you not. By the time it got to the third round, the third pick, I was a faucet. Mm-hmm. It was incredible. It was one of the happiest days of my life, John.
That's pretty strong.
You betcha. You know, I mean, we have hope.
Mm-hmm.
There's hope in Gotham. When's the last time you can say that about the Jet franchise?
Not long, particularly at the quarterback position, although I'm sure you were saddened by the release of Bryce Petty.
Yeah, well, I was crippled by that. I'm surprised it took as long as it did.
Yeah.
Although I will give them credit, they did leak the rumor that they were trying to that people were calling and trying to shop them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't buy
Nobody
that.
Nobody bought it,
second,
but it's like, hey, it was nice to say.
But yeah, but it was very very Trumpian.
Uh-huh.
For probably fake news, but let me ask you this, because I mean it couldn't have gone any better. Maccagnan just did a wonderful job in putting him in the position, and you know it just played out, and we're darn lucky that it did. But what do you make of the rest of the draft? Kind of odd.
Yeah, it was a little different. But again, I mean, they're so active in free agency that you can see it was going to be a little bit different than you expect.
Well, the best I can make of it is this, and let me get your impression of this. It looks like what they're doing is they're bringing some of these guys in to kind of redshirt for this year.
Right.
And basically they're looking to build these guys up for next year. For example, you got your defensive linemen. Yeah, they have needs in defensive line. There's no question about that. I mean, you've got McClendon, but he's, you know, maybe he's going to give you one more year, and how much of that year is he going to give you? So you basically are drafting his backup. You know, likewise, I don't think you can rely on Pinnell. So you're kind of, you know, drafting a backup. You know, guys you don't really need this year,
mm-hmm.
per se, maybe in a role capacity, but you're basically building for next year because these are guys that need work. They need some experience. You know, and likewise with I thought, you know, outside of Darnold, I thought that was a great pick they got with the cornerback from Tulane.
Right.
You know, again, do they need him this year? Not necessarily, because I suspect he's probably going to replace Buster Skrine. You know, I don't know if he's going to be good enough to let Skrine go, and they really don't need the cap space this year anyway. But, you know, Skrine's on the last year of his deal. So I see him, you know, getting primed to step in next year as the slot corner. You know, I don't know if he's going to make it on the outside. He's kind of small. But so that's kind of what I was seeing, you know, with the draft. And the only one I can see maybe stepping in directly and playing a role is the tight end. But all these guys come with a lot of risk. I mean, they got good value for them, if you will, either because these guys came from small schools or they're coming back from injuries. So, you know, it's kind of risky. But this is also the first draft where Maccagnan went after, you know, predominantly small school guys, because his prior drafts, he's basically gone from the big major colleges.
Mm-hmm.
So what's your take on that theory?
The big thing is, hey, they got the quarterback.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they've been active in free agency. They've got cap room. They've been able to do all that. But I think the big thing, they've answered something at quarterback with a guy. And you can see that he was very comfortable yesterday. Yeah, maybe his mechanics weren't right. But, again, he's not playing immediately. So it's like that's not that big of a deal. But I like the fact that they lucked into it and they got a quarterback.
Yeah. So now I can start building. They've got something to build around. You know,
and, of course, this is Jett, who was so apprehensive thinking it was going to be Baker Mayfield. Now it turns into a screams of joy.
I know. It's wonderful. That's all I can tell you. I'm just so glad it wasn't Baker Mayfield. Like I said, it's not like I dislike Mayfield, but that was too much of a price to pay to move up for a six-foot quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to make sense of – let's look at it from a different angle – trying to make sense of the draft pick, or the Browns draft pick of Baker Mayfield. And all I can think of was to try to rationalize is this. You've got they've got Tyrod Taylor, who is kind of a mobile quarterback, if you will, and somewhat of a similar style of Mayfield, if you want. And so I'm sitting there thinking that they've kind of got, you know, interchangeable quarterbacks now, so you don't really have to mess with the system. You've got two guys who have, you know, similar talents, so you can just install the same system. Neither one can fit within it. I mean, that was the best rationale I could come up with.
Mm-hmm. But, hey, it was a good one, and I think now that you feel good about things, and life is good if you're a Jet fan.
This is one of the best Aprils we've had in a long time, John.
It's been a while. Hey, Jet, thank you for the phone call.
Oh, thank you, too, for the Prozac leading up to it.
You got it. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Tracy in Gig Harbor. Hey, Tracy.
Hi, Professor. I was watching the free agency going on with the Rams this year and kind of feeling sick to my stomach being a Seahawks fan. But I'd like you to comment on what you think their chance of success is really going to be, bringing in all those different personalities they did through free agency.
Well, obviously there's a good to it, but there's also, I think, a bad to it. And where the bad is, you know, bringing in that many high-priced guys, you know, they're not going to be there as long. I mean, the window's going to be a little bit shorter because you can't keep all those guys. I mean, particularly when you have to pay Aaron Donald $20 million. You have to do something with Marcus Peters, and that's going to be $14 or $15 million. So, you know, it's going to be a shorter window. And, of course, to do the wide receivers, they had to give away their two top picks. Yeah, they had 9 draft choices or so, but you know, they had to give away so much to get the wide receiver thing, and I thought maybe they overdid it to a certain degree, but I like what they're doing. I mean, they're doing it in a different but similar way to what Seattle and other teams have done when you have a quarterback that's a draft choice. I mean, you try to bulk up as much around and then worry about the rest later and then try to fix it later. But I like what they're doing. And again, right now, I think, as you said, if you're a Seahawks fan, it probably does make you sick because it puts them at the top of the division.
Yeah, that's what I think too, unfortunately. But I was thinking it's probably they better do it this year if they're going to do it.
Oh, agreed. Again, because you know there's no way they're going to be able to keep Sue, because I mean Sue's going to make $14 million and Donald's going to make $6 million more than him, and so you know he's not going to be happy about that. So I mean they get to rent him for a year, but again it's a good rental.
Yeah, well it'll be an interesting season. Thanks a lot, Professor.
Hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
Hey, we said we ought to thank Matt Nelson for all the work he's doing, producing, running everything over. And we take your phone calls at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. The phones are open, and we got lots on the line here. Let's go to Dan in West Seattle. Hey, Dan.
Hi, John. Great show today.
Thank you
so much for covering so much that you do.
Well, thank you.
You know, I really feel like the Seahawks have done some great things nobody really knows about. So I try to track all the undrafted free agents,
mm-hmm.
and before they get to the draft, before they don't get to the draft. One of the pieces that the Seahawks signed, Justin Stockton, a small kind of Deion Lewis type of back out of Texas Tech.
Right.
Had ridiculous numbers. I mean, he put up almost 6 yards a carry against three top 20 FBS rushing defenses. And we know Texas Tech is, it's a mixed offense, and so they throw the ball a lot, and yet he was running the ball that well against those types of rushing defenses. And I think that's just such an amazing pickup for them as a, you know, signed undrafted free agent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the other pieces that I noticed is, you know, nobody really talks about it the way it should be talked about. The Seahawks lost two starting Pro Bowl defensive ends.
Right.
That's huge. That's gigantic. And they are, you know, really focusing on the DN thing. They've got four guys that are regularly, you know, talked about. They brought two more guys in with Rasheem Green and Jacob Martin. But they also brought four undrafted free agents, including a guy by the name of Marcel Frazier.
Okay.
And I don't know if you know much about him, but he finished his last season with 15.5 tackles for loss, including 7 sacks. He's 6'5", 256, out of Missouri. So he was playing in the SEC. And that, those are staggeringly great numbers, and yet he wasn't drafted. I mm-hmm. had him ranked 4th, 5th round. And the Seahawks were paying attention, and they picked him up as an undrafted free agent. You know, I don't understand how so many players fall through. The Seahawks are one of the best teams. The Packers are another one that really look at all the guys that nobody's paying attention at.
Right.
And, you know, so Terry Swanson and Hunt out of Toledo, both great backs. Hunt obviously went into the NFL and has had great success, Kareem Hunt. But nobody looked at their tackles. They mm-hmm. had starting tackles for 4 years there that graduated this year, Elijah Nkasa and Brent Weiss, that nobody drafted. The Titans picked up Nkasa as an undrafted free agent, and the Cardinals picked up Brent Weiss. And I think these kids will go on to play in the NFL. Their numbers are solid. They had great combine numbers, and yet, you know, because they weren't the prototypical 340-pound or 320-pound tackles, nobody even looked at them. And what we know about those is those guys are 22-year-olds. They'll put on another 20 pounds if you train them.
So it sounds like you like the undrafted class. That's I'm going to be going over there in an hour, about an hour and a half, and that's what I'm going to be studying to kind of get a look and feel for those guys.
Well, I got to tell you, the guys that I really like, I think Marcus Martin is another guy that nobody's talking about. They drafted him as a fullback.
Mm-hmm.
But in college, his last year, he had 26.5 tackles for loss, including 15.5 sacks for Slippery Rock. That's a guy that wants to play football.
No doubt. Hey,
well, John,
great
call. Hey, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it. It's always good to hear you.
Great. Thank you. Good call. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Victor in Auburn. Hey, Victor.
Hey, John. Another great show.
Well, thank you.
Hey, a couple quick ones. Any serious this weekend?
Not this weekend. I was on yesterday with Alex Marvez because both you know, Jim Miller and, believe it or not, Pat Kerwin took off. So, yeah, I was on it yesterday.
Okay. Nothing for next week, though, right?
At this moment, no.
Okay. And then a quick one. I know Denver was lucky to get Chubb at 5. If any of the quarterbacks or Barkley had fallen to 5, would Denver have picked any of them instead of Chubb?
No, I think they would. Obviously, they would have taken Darnold. But I was surprised that they passed on Josh Allen because, as we talked, I thought that would be the quarterback they would go to for big and strong. And apparently, did you know that they had a deal? This story just came out in the last 24 hours. They had a deal with Buffalo where Buffalo was going to give them their 2 first-round picks. But once Chubb fell to them, they did not want to pass.
Okay. And then the other question was about the I'm sorry, if Denver doesn't get a lead, you know, I know they're more likely to have some points on the board with a better quarterback, but if they don't get a lead, doesn't it take away a lot of their defensive power? Because it's mostly rushing the quarterback and cutting off time for them, right?
Yeah. But again, I guess the benefit, which of course there's no benefit to a losing season, is that they were able to get one of the top players you can get in any draft. I mean, that's mm-hmm. I mean, this guy should be a Pro Bowl player for a lot of years. So I think that you know, they get a break in that regard.
Okay. And then who do you think will be the starting running back at day one? Do you think Booker will be
Booker?
Able to keep
yeah,
up,
I think it's going
to
be Booker.
Try the rookie?
Yeah, I'm still. I know we talked about this yesterday on Sirius. It's like I still can't believe that they gave up on CJ. I mean, it's like that just to me was baffling.
Yeah, it seemed like there's maybe something behind the scenes of what was going on, because he was productive and he was able to play properly. But all right, John, hey, you take care. Have a good weekend, bud.
Okay, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Bob in Renton. Hey, Bob.
Good morning. Good to talk to you, sir.
Good talking to you.
Two quick questions. Well, I don't know if they're quick, but one was the obvious one. How many of the nine you think are likely to be on the team for the first game of the season after preseason? And the second one was?
I'd say, by the way, seven or eight. I mean, because, you know, I think that now a lot of those guys may be inactive. They're not going to be, you know, getting a uniform. But, you know, I think that, you know, because I would imagine they're only going to keep two quarterbacks. And if they only keep two quarterbacks, then, you know, Magoo will then go on the practice squad.
That makes perfect sense. I like Magoo. I think he's a good shot for the future. The other one was, how well do you think Solari's going to do with what he has left over from last year?
Because
we
he's
didn't
do
get
great.
Very many new alignments, so I'm curious about that part.
I think it's because what you like is that there's a physicalness that he's going to want, and he's going to convert, and I think that's going to work out pretty well. He's a good coach. I mean, he's been here before. He knows what he's doing. And I think that he'll get this line to be more physical. Maybe that might help our Jermaine Ifedi, being more physical, maybe that's what he needed and less finesse. So I think it's going to work out really well. The guy's a very good coach.
Oh, excellent. Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you very much. And, of course, I don't know, do we have time to squeeze in one more, Matt, or we probably need to get – okay, so it's like probably have run out of time. So, again, fun show. It's going to be looking forward here in about 90 minutes to go over and, you know, make that little walk over to see what's going on at the minicamp. Minicamp, of course, tomorrow morning, too. Get to look at the 15 guys that they've signed that are undrafted, the nine draft choices, and then, you know, seeing what it looks like overall with the attitude. Seems like it's a real good attitude. Also looking forward to hearing the music, because one of the things that's really good about practice is they usually have some pretty good music. I can hear it cranked up, when they have the OTAs and all that just over here. So, again, thank you, everybody. We will be back Monday at 10 a.m. And, of course, back here next Saturday at 9. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.